The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Starfellows, your favorite D&D podcast in a galaxy far, far away. I am your Dungeon Master, Rob, and with me, as always, are my friends, Hannah.
What up?
Amelia Som.
Hi.
That's the most flustered I've ever seen you. And Brennan.
Hi, screen recording.
I was trying to think of something funny to say, and then I had too many ideas starting, and so then I just panicked and said hi.
That's fair. Okay, so last where we left off, we were in the middle of a pretty intense conversation with not so good, but very old, Veltz Arrakiad, the 9,000-year-old Volpterite vampire industrialist, who is now sitting, weeping gently in a high swivel-back chair in his room in the tallest tower of his polar estate at the South Pole of Coruscant. You all have just burst into his room and got his life story about growing up on the planet Volpter, which became horribly polluted thanks in part to his own industrial efforts in pioneering hyperspace technology for his people. You also confronted him about the death of his daughter some 9,000 years ago, which is a pretty low blow considering, I mean, I guess, you know, he's a villain, fuck him. So, you called him an asshole, among other things. And generally...
Okay. Yeah. I just want to say, if your daughter dies and you make a droid replica of her and then also become a weird vampire and ruin a bunch of other people's lives, yeah, I'm going to throw some salt in that wound. I don't feel bad.
Completely reasonable. Completely reasonable. It's more so in my mind, it's like, it was 9,000 years ago. Like I didn't expect when I put that detail in that you guys would be like, we're going to weaponize the shit out of this. But I'm happy that you did.
Yeah.
Ron
wants to go on record as saying he hates this guy anyway.
I do want to say want mostly.
I'm going to give you a bucket of salt to pour more physical salt as if he were a slug.
I also just wanted on record that I wasn't specifically trying to weaponize the fact that his daughter died in some horrific accident. I was mostly like, bitch, your droid replica daughter doesn't even want you.
That's also fair.
Okay, what an asshole. I'm so sorry.
In any case, so after confronting him about the death of his daughter and you guys don't necessarily know the whole specifics of Rosie. You know that this man has, like, definitely, like, that was the goal, was to recreate his daughter. Ultimately, like, Rosie is not that. So there is like still some nuance there that we're going to get into essentially right now. But we're going to open up with Veltz. He's crying, weeping gently, but his face is still mostly just an expressionless mask. He's crying, but this being has lived so long that like the pain that he feels from these wounds, this emotional pain, are just the dull vibrations of a much larger explosion that happened in the distant past. Like, so you have reopened this wound, but he has reached a profound level of acceptance of his own evilness. And he looks at you and says, "Yar, y'all vast me. Why do I stay here? I have nary a choice. I would have ended it, ye wee twit, much long ago. But the ring doesn't go that easy. I am a prisoner in my own body. Of my own making, I understand. But it's not so easy as jumping out the windy."
"The fuck's a windy?"
"Oh, if you want to find out, I can chuck you out one. Defenestration's what they call it. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be in this shitty polar ice cap. The only thing I'm proud of anymore is that droid I made. Not because she's a replacement for what I lost, but because I created something actually worthwhile. The orb of the One Mind, the orb we found in the ziggurat. I put it in Rosie. It's what makes her, her. The orb, well, let me start more with these artifacts. They do resonate with each other. They speak in a way in the mind of the people that hold them. And they yearn to be together. Like magnets, they try to pull their wielders closer together. We were slick enough in the moment to realize, or maybe not slick enough, but greedy enough, that we should all split them. Take them different parts of our galaxies and do away with them. So they've never been combined by one person holding more than one at any given time, but they do call out for each other. With that in mind, it was getting difficult to wear the ring and have the orb. But the orb is a bit different. It's not as clearly evil as a ring that turns you into a blood-sucking, raw, flesh-eating monster. And fuck if I know what the other ones do, but the crown is no picnic either. But the orb was mostly innate. It didn't do much. And yet when you scan it with force sensitive technology, it fries it. The sensors are so overwhelmed that they explode damn near every time they're used. As far as I can reason, from what the ring has tried to tell me, is that the orb of the One Mind is the condensed combination of the spirit and presence of millions of formerly living alien lives. I don't know exactly how it was made or how any of these things came into being, but it resembles in a way how black holes form. The condensing of an astronomical amount of matter creates a rip in space that sucks in everything, including light. And this orb is a super condensed version of the spiritual equivalent of mass. Force energy, if that has any approximation to the truth. So I got thinking over a few thousand years. I was struggling to find an AI that could replicate a human consciousness. So I got to thinking, if I could just pull a little bit of that spirit, of that soul out of this dense orb, I could use it. I wouldn't have to make a new AI or a new piece of tech. I just needed to pull out something that already existed in this orb. And so I made the MIND device, the Multiple Intelligences Nebular device, that could, using kyber crystals, divert a great amount of energy from the orb to stabilize it, and develop technology to go along with it that would imprint a personality from the orb. In effect, create a new person using a mix of the technology and the force of the orb. So I did. It worked. And he looks kind of proud of himself for a second. And he smiles. A few hundred years ago, I was finally successful. And I made Rosie, but I was worried. The orb is immensely deadly? I don't even know. It is a orb that contains the force power of millions of force sensitives worth of souls.
Yeah, that sounds like it could be deadly.
But in and of itself, it's not like it's a gun or a lightsaber or some sort of super weapon in and of itself. You see what I mean? It's a piece of complete anomaly in the galaxy that if somebody smarter or more nefarious than I cracked it, figured out how to turn it into some sort of weapon, it could end entire solar systems. So, but nobody knows that, except you three, and now, well, and me, of course. And I don't think, for the record, there's many people smarter than me with technology. I've just been here a long time, and I've had the ability to study the orb for a long time. Well, so now you know that, but the point of me telling you this is that Rosie doesn't know that either. She thinks the orb is a sophisticated piece of technology that I created. She doesn't know that it's an artifact with immense power. And part of the programming that makes the MIND device work limits the construct's ability to perceive that aspect of itself. It's a bit of a complicated bit of programming, but in effect, she doesn't know the full scope of what she is. However, I think it's time she does know. Because if I'm passing soon, as I can sense from the murderous intent that's been thrown at me over the past half an hour, then it's high time she understands. Yes, okay, so he communicates that all to you. Now, the other objects, it stands to reason that the rest of them, including this ring, are more powerful than the people that hold them realize. And them being scattered in the universe and all, probably not in the best of hands to begin with. I know I can't ask this of you, but the ring and the orb can be contained. In the vault downstairs, there's containment units I built specifically to contain the force energies of the objects, to prevent them from calling out to us and to other people. I'll give you the blueprints for them. They're also in the vault downstairs. I'm sure Rosie could manufacture them even better than I could. Okay. Oh yeah, and do get the crown back from that Cathartoid. Yeah, that thing does scare me. I'll level with you. That crown is no joke. The crown of Erebus was incredibly deadly when we found it, and I can't even imagine it in the hands of someone that could wield it properly.
What did you tell us exactly what that did?
Yeah, so to summarize what he told you last episode, the Crown of Erebus is a crown that when it was put on by the scientists and engineers and industrialists that first found it, basically popped their heads like a tick. Like, the energy of the crown completely overwhelmed them and it just exploded their heads. The ones that were able to survive that swell of energy ended up basically reflexively casting force magic that would summon creatures of purple smoke. What the implication was when you're talking with him is that they weren't the same worms that you've been encountering. It seems like the worms are a thing that's unique to Sue, who has the crown. He described like monstrosities, like things that were like more animalistic coming from the smoke. But the one thing the crown has in common with between all its wielders is that the wielder of the crown will instinctually try to dominate the wills of other people. So that's the crown's whole thing.
Do you know if any of them have been attempted to be destroyed?
I can't fairly say for many of them. I think the dagger has mostly been used to assassinate various people throughout history and has passed through many hands, but I don't know where its current whereabouts are or if anyone's tried to destroy that. The staff, I'm fairly sure, cannot be destroyed. It has a weird property where it tends to change its form quite frequently. I don't know why that is, and I've never really seen the full extent of its abilities, but I'm fairly certain it would be difficult to destroy that. Oh, perhaps a lightsaber could do it, or drop it in a black hole or a supernova. I'm sure there are ways, is what I'm getting at. I've tried to destroy the ring, but there's a practical problem. I can't emphasize this enough. The ring does not want me to die or for it to leave my possession. Which is, again, why I can't just cut off my own hand, so to speak. So it won't really let me get close enough to trying to destroy it without me fucking it up or forget what I'm doing. Or sometimes I just black out for a day or two. It's not a great time. The orb, I would not even try to destroy it. I would handle that thing only with silk gloves and a mask and lots of radioactive protective gear. Although I don't think it's actually radioactive, but fuck, that thing is... Anyway.
Fuck, I hope not.
You're a tech genius who's been doing this for 9,000 years and you don't know if it's like radioactive or anything.
I mean, I'm fairly certain it's not radioactive, but the point I'm trying to get across is that I took every precaution possible to not upset the thing. Because all I'm saying is that there's a possibility I could anger an orb that contains the collective will of millions of people and it could lash out at me. I don't think the ring could save me from that.
Okay.
So I was very polite.
I'll give you that.
Has anyone ever tried to take the ring off of you?
I've asked a few people to try it. Ended up killing them by mistake.
No, I'm not exactly one for too many questions here, but what do you mean it, and how does the ring end up killing someone? I mean, you know, the crown, I can kind of get it. Brain, head, boom. But, if I try to smash a ring, what exactly would happen that would be so lethal? I'm wearing Beskar here.
He looks you up and down, and you like see his eyes like tracking your armor, and you see his eyes like focus on areas like the soft areas of the armor in your neck and like on the side of your thighs, and some like under your armpits and stuff, and says,
"The ring is a parasite that uses its considerable power to grow its own power through making its host consume the blood of other sentient creatures. It's been feeding on me for 9,000 years. I may be frail, but I can see every artery in your body, bud. I know exactly where to poke you if I need to poke you. And the ring gives me considerable strength to be able to wield my body as a weapon. You could shoot me a lot, and I would still be coming for your neck.
That's got to be the worst thing I have heard, and I have been to so many fucking planets. You got some issues.
Oh, do I now? Oh, I was completely unaware. Thank you for pointing that. I'll seek help for it right away.
Which, I swear, man, you're starting to push my buttons.
Oh, yeah? Push your buttons? You think that's what I'm doing? Whose house you think you're in? Whose fucking tower is this?
Go down!
Well, we're about the blasters.
Alright. Somebody tell me to do it.
Is it that time already, huh? Well, I've got nothing more to say to you. Except for this. I want y'all to be able to take this ring from me. But, like I said, the ring doesn't really let me do that. So I'll try my best to just, not block. I don't know. I tend to black out when the ring makes me do a bunch of athletic nonsense.
Can I? What? Is he talking? Are we rolling initiative right now? Because if not, I want to do something.
What? It depends on what you want to do.
I don't really see the point of rolling initiative.
Yeah, I just want to try and cut off his arm while he's talking.
Okay, yeah, no, you're gonna have to roll initiative.
I figured.
Okay. I mean, like, all right. We just gotta chop him up into a million pieces, right? That's the solution.
Rob, you really, if there's one thing you hate in this, it's PG-13. I swear to God. I've had
enough
blood.
I love it. Rob, change absolutely nothing.
This keeps getting fucking worse.
Violence, violence. I'm really excited to take one hit and immediately fall down at my 9 HP. I assume what this conversation didn't count as a short rest.
No, but I'm going to say that all of you are going to... You can all roll initiative on advantage because this man is 9,000 years old, and even though the ring has kept him alive, 9,000 years does not do wonders on the joints. All right,
it's 15
out
of
It
didn't
help.
Time.
I rolled worse.
Yeah, plus I did too, but I got 19 either way. So
I got 19...
Okay.
Oh, I don't need dexterity when I got these
rippling
muscles.
Repeat all that again. Han?
I got a 19.
7. No, sorry. 8.
Rama?
19.
Oh, you also rolled a 19, Brennan?
Yep.
Goddamn.
You and Han, you both of you just roll another d20 for me.
Isn't it 13. By modifier?
Oh, who has a better modifier?
Plus 4 to dex for me.
Okay, I'm plus 3, so you go first.
Okay.
All right. I'm just going to start shooting him.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and just... you're up first, big guy, so you can go ahead and just start shooting at him.
Okay, so it says the disarming attack that I have, that's my signature maneuver... Does it count if I'm trying to literally dismember the arm?
I don't think that is the meaning of the disarm.
I want to disarm that arm. I just...
I mean, you do see, like, the like... Okay, so... hold on. Let me narrate something. Let me narrate something real quick. Okay, so... Veltz stands up. His chair behind him... sprouts out a bunch of like weaponized arms with blasters and stuff like that. You see like two different ones like come up. Yeah, so basically two blaster arms come up from behind his chair. And he kind of like just stands up, like kind of squaring up, ready to fight. If you want to like attack the chair, you can. I'll say that it's just like, I mean, you can disarm those guns, like the gun that shot L last episode, but he's like unarmed. And the chair is, like, part of his initiative, so, like, it's not, like, two separate enemies.
Y'all, the chair did 55 damage last episode. I don't know if we're gonna survive this.
Oh, I'm just gonna die.
Come on.
Crazy. Okay, so, all right. So I am going to... So one of my maneuvers, by the way, is called World on Fire. I haven't used it yet.
But if I hit, I get to use it, and it's really fun. So I'm going to start off with the standard array and shoot three times the blaster pistols. All right. First one is a 20, not natural.
20 hits.
Second one is a 20 again, non natural.
That doesn't hit. No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
Obviously. Okay. Last one is, oh my god, it is actually a 20. You, I'm not did, kidding.
Did it's you roll three?
No, so I have no advantage. I have no proficiency, and then proficiency. And the no proficiency is just a plus 7. I got 16, 16. And then they got a 13 on the third one, which is plus my proficiency, which is, again, okay. a 20.
Okay, so you didn't roll, like, three natural. Okay.
No, no, I did not roll the same number three times.
All three of those hit, so roll damage.
Okay, now, hold up. I'd like to use, okay, so on your turn, when you hit with weapon attack, you can use a bonus action. I can roll one superiority die to ignite the phosphorescent powder on your target, dealing an extra fire damage equal to the result of the roll. So can I narratively take some Mandalorian gadget powder, shoot it onto him, and then fire to make it explode with this maneuver?
Yeah, so in one go, so you're burning your reaction for your bonus blaster shot and then your bonus action to do this.
The powder, yeah. And then the action to fire.
You can right. do that 100%.
So, burned my action, my reaction, and my bonus action. Shot three times, I'll hit. I'm going to do disarming blow just for the extra damage, even if I can't actually disarm him. Because I can spend a superiority die for the damage. So that is, so the first shot was 8 damage,
okay.
Energy, then he took 2 fire damage from the explosive powder.
Okay, so 8 plus 2, so that's 10.
Then I got a 1 plus, so it's 5 energy damage.
Okay.
Then 9 energy damage, and then the last maneuver got me, 10 energy damage.
Wow, okay.
and he's currently, so also now that he's currently on fire, he sheds light within a 5-foot radius and can't become invisible until the next turn because he's currently on fire.
Yeah, okay. You do 34 damage this thing. So he stands up, he says, well, it's about that time. The arms come out from behind the chair. You draw immediately on him. three times. The last one, before you fire that last shot, you holster your gun, throw a little bit of powder on him. He engulfs in flame. You see him like roll back three times. He stands up to his full height. He's like a 6.5-foot tall, like hippo humanoid. So he is like a big dude, even though he's old. He has kind of that like leather, old, like wrinkled skin, like an old elephant kind of. But you see him ignite on the third blaster fire, and he cackles out a haunting laugh. Bring it on, boy. And you see his like skin start to like burn and char and like melt and swirl. And you see from his ring hand the gemstone in the center starts to glow and emanate, and you see the veins in his left hand where the ring is start to like grow huge and swollen and red, and you see the skin that is burning get repaired in real time as it is singed.
Ooh.
What? Those gives a vampire if
his,
I burned
like,
him.
Giant hippo tusks flame up and like catch fire, and you see that his tusks are burning kind of in this like hell that is this figure. So that will
excuse me, mister, I just want to point out you're a vampire. The fire should have hurt you more. You should stop regenerating. You're saying
he just continues to laugh maniacally over your comment, and it is Han's turn.
Great. So, there's two guns on the chair?
I got two
Yes.
guns.
Okay. Are they? They look big. Do they look strong? Do they look crazy?
Roll me an insight check.
Okay.
DC 18.
Because I would like to get rid of those things. Oh, that's a 17. God damn it. No, wait, it is an 18. Led by the Force, motherfucker. Yes.
Yay.
Excellent. You look at the guns and you realize that they're not, like, aiming at anyone. And you, like, kind of replay some of the past conversation in your head, and you come away with the impression of, like, this guy told us he wanted to die. Like, he's not going to try to not kill you, but I think that, like, it's within his power to not use. Like, you come away with the idea, like, I think maybe those guns are a little bit for show. I think this whole thing might be kind of him putting on a bit of a display for his final moments.
Yeah, I get that. But are we going to be able to kill him is my thing. All right, fine. I'll just go in swinging. Why the fuck not, I guess. Cool. I'm going to phase throw at him.
At the fuck guy. Yeah.
Well, okay. I'm going to use my my bonus action to use Force Imbuement to raise my to hit modifier. Then I'm going to fucking chuck, activate my shield and chuck it at him. Let's fucking go.
What, to remind me, does he need to make a saving throw or do you roll the hit
for that? I'm rolling the hit. Okay. That's a 23?
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay, I'll roll for the second attack for my extra attack. Do the same thing. That is a 12.
Yeah, 12 matches, so you do hit.
Oh, fuck yeah. All right, okay. That's 7 damage, not great.
7 damage. Okay, for the first hit, okay.
Yeah. 1. No, I got snake eyes. What the fuck? That's 4 damage, so I guess 11 total.
Okay. So you throw Soul in this, like, pretty, like, cramped space. So what you're able to do is kind of, like, yo-yo it at him and, like, hit him once on the first initial throw and then hit him on the return pull. So you throw Soul. He's able to, like, lightning quick, like, turn his shoulders and spin, so it clips him on his collarbone, and you see, like, a deep gash that would normally completely, like cripple and like, you know, if not kill, at least, like, completely take out of the battle a normal person. There is a huge diagonal, like, chunk of flesh missing from his, like, collarbone, like, into his chest. And then as he kind of, like, steadies himself and goes towards Rama with a haymaker, you come and undercut him and, like, slash through part of his leg, stopping him. And you all see those wounds quickly, but not as quick as the initial burns, start to close and knit themselves back together. But you also see that the burns are also becoming more and more permanent on his body. And he continues to howl maniacally. that'll be El's turn.
Okay. I would like to do a called shot, if I may.
Okay.
I want to try and cut off his hand.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to use my bonus action to do Falling Avalanche, so I will expend a use to channel the Force and reduce my speed by half to gain advantage on the next ability check or attack roll, make using strength, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Thank you, Dice Gods. I appreciate it. Natural 20.
Hell
Thank
yeah.
Thank you very much. Is what I was hoping for. I've been manifesting that this whole time.
You were due for one. All right, so nat 20. So you're going to do a ton of damage to him.
7 plus 7, 14 plus 2. That is 16 energy damage on my first attack, in which I would like to attempt to cut off his arm.
Okay. Wait, but you crit, right? So did you Did you double it or double the dice?
I was just doubling the dice.
Okay, cool, cool. So you did 16 damage?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. How do you cut off his hand?
Yeah. I think I see all this happening. And while he is busy kind of looking at, like, Rama and Akala, maybe they were, like, standing in one part and I was, like, a little over to the side, while he's, like, laughing maniacally and they're digging into him, I'm just going to, like, just jump up and go straight, like, whip my lightsaber out in a spinning motion and just cut off his hand. I like to think it does that thing where I just, like, move it really quickly and there's a pause and then his hand just, like, falls off, like, midway through his forearm.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so he's, like, coming, like, reaching out his hand towards Rama, giving you the perfect opportunity to, like, sidestep, do a beautiful full, like, 360 arc with your lightsaber in front of you, like, at a spin move. Flashes on, flashes off, and you see his hand with the ring go flying up into the air and lands with a wet thud as the fire burns out the rest of Veltz's body. You see his other hand reaches up to the sky and says, "Rosie." And then everything crumbles into ash. And you have killed the head of the estate, Veltz Acriad.
I'm just gonna very carefully pick up the hand without touching the ring. Or does the hand also crumble into ash?
The hand also does crumble into ash. And as it does so, also Monkey, his invisibility drive, and you see him go up and stand next to the ring. So you can attempt to pick it up. I just need to know if you're going to commit to trying to do that or not.
I would like to not physically touch it, but if I have, oh yeah, I have the force. I'm going to use the force to lift it up.
If I'm like a pair.
Okay. So you can use the force to pick it up. What I'm going to need from you is a constitution saving throw.
Constitution saving throw. Uh-oh. Are you sure you don't want it to be a different saving throw?
No, I'm pretty sure I want it to be a constitution saving throw.
Okay. So that's a 10. Just going to put that dice over there.
Yeah, L, to your perception, you use the force to pick up this ring and it's hovering right in front of you. Everyone else sees you pick up the ring with the force and it's hovering right in front of you and it's slowly swirling, and you see that it is gathering light. There's wisps of dark red mist around it. Rama and Akala, make me perception checks.
It is a 19.
Yeah, that's a 2, unsurprisingly.
Han, L picked up this ring with the force. You see that it is drifting slowly towards his outstretched hand.
L, be careful.
Huh? Do I notice that? Not that it's pointed out to me.
Go ahead and roll me another constitution saving throw.
18.
So now you realize that this ring is about 6 inches away from your ring finger.
Ah, shit. I drop it immediately. Fuck.
Could we hold it at the same time? Do you think that would work?
Could we give it to Monkey since he's not an organic life form?
Monkey kind of like dances around a little bit and like looks at it kind of curiously. And then you see like a little program like notifier go off, like in one of the lights connected to his head, like a little doo doo doo. And his chest cavity opens. And Hannah, you can see like where that circular cavity is in his chest. And instead of a circular orb, you see actually like a square like ring box like glass container that looks like it has some sort of technology on it, and he pulls it out of his chest and puts in a small code at the bottom of the box that then clicks open, and it looks like the ring can be placed in there and contained safely for the moment.
I knew it. The monkey's trying to propose marriage.
And he kind of looks at you and like clasps his hands next to his chin, like very like sarcastically.
Thank you, Monkey. Right now, we gotta worry about this ring.
Yeah.
I mean, I can try to put it in. But the... Unless El's save is gonna carry them through continuing to hold it.
El dropped it once they realized that. Okay. So the ring's on the ground right now. You can try to manipulate it with the force if you want to.
Yeah, I can try. Let's do that.
Only a constitution saving throw.
How constitute are you?
Plus zero.
Oh my god.
That's an 11. So that's one more than you, right?
You pick up the ring. It starts slowly swirling with wisps of red smoke and red mist. And you don't realize it, but it's drifting slowly towards your hand. You think that
I'm gonna use...
Wait. Hey, Akala fully thinks she's nailed this. Like, that she can hold this ring with the force and it not drift towards her hand.
Even with my 19 perception, I'm not on the lookout for that.
It's not affecting your perception from a outside perspective. This thing is dominating your mind to get you to accept it.
Fuck.
Since I know it does that now, can I roll perception with advantage, or do I need to, since I know what's going on?
If I watch them...
So you guys, I mean, I think that seeing, like, you guys know that this is what the ring, like, you've seen this. You don't need to roll for perception.
I'm just going to go really quickly and try and, like, beat Akala with the force and shove it, like, straight into the box. Like, just a swift movement.
So you're trying to contest her own force power?
Yeah.
So I think you guys need to roll me opposed force checks. Unless, Han, you want to, like, try to roll another constitution saving throw to snap
out. I mean, I'll let go if I sense that something's going wrong. If I can sense that something's going wrong.
I did not.
I won't contest unless the ring is making me contest.
Is this just like a force attack or just with our force modifier?
I will say just saying, hey, this thing is like moving towards you is an option. But
I will. I'm just going to say, hey, and like try and swat it out at the same time.
I mean, I'll drop it if that's what happens.
Yeah.
Do this in character for me. Just I'll let you guys work this out.
So it's floating towards you and I say, hey, and I try and swipe it into the box. Like, I literally swipe your hand. I hit it.
Are you hitting my hand or the ring?
I'm hitting your hand. I'm not going to touch the ring.
Tapping on the wrist.
Then I let go.
Okay. If Akala voluntarily lets go,
you
can just drop it. It doesn't need to be a contestant.
Yeah. I'm just going to kick it over toward the box.
Monkey scoops it up, throws it in the box, closes the lid, hits a button. You see it shut down and fill with red smoke, but it looks contained. Monkey puts it in his chest, closes his chest cavity. You hear like a lock, basically, a mechanical lock. Go, and the ring is contained. One hiccup, you know the treasure door downstairs requires the ring to be opened, which is doable with the container, but just reminding you of that fact.
First things first, I want to make sure this motherfucker's dead. I'm going to go over and
he's ash. Start he turns to ash. On his,
it's his just a ashes. Bunch of ashes.
Just going to double tap him. Like, you get that motherfucker, you stay down. We burned you to pieces. Gonna try and take away my bounty hunter license. Come on, just gonna take away my ship, you piece of shit. How do you like that? How do you like that? You like that? Making me give my mask off.
Is that necessary?
All right. I'm going to start walking out.
Rama, as you're stepping on the ashes, the hologram reactivates like right in front of you. So his giant hippo face is like right up to yours and says, ah! Just right in your face.
I'm going to start punching the hologram.
And it deactivates itself right away. So then you're just punching air.
Can I investigate the room real quick?
Sure. What are you looking for?
Just anything that... He said he was going to give us blueprints, right? Did we get blueprints?
Those were downstairs.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where Elle's heading.
Just for anything else interesting that might be helpful or of note?
Yeah. Yeah, you can roll. Sure.
All right. Well, that's a 7, so I don't know if we'll find anything.
Seven. No, yeah, you don't find anything. I mean, this is, like, just an old man's room. Like, there's, like, photographs and, like, portraits hanging, and you see a lot of, like, a lot of documents about, like, experimentation and mechanical stuff that you're like nothing pops out as being particularly interesting. You know, you're effectively looking at like blueprints for like niche parts of more significant technology, if that makes sense. Like if you looked at like one component of a hyperdrive, it would look like just
right.
like visual kind of nonsense. And it's a lot of that. So nothing that's like clearly jumps out to you as being important.
Got it.
Could I, was that an investigation or perception check, Han?
I just investigated.
All right. In that case, could I just pray to the dice gods and try a perception check to see if there's any hidden compartments, some tech lying around, or something that would be good to loot from our dead friend?
Yeah, sure.
That's a 14.
14?
It's double what I got. Room.
Yeah, still really no luck. You just don't see anything that really catches your eye. I mean, this place is, I mean, there's like things like swords hanging on the wall that like this guy was rich enough where like those could be valuable artifacts, but like they just kind of look like wall dressing in this big ass fancy house. Like nothing stands out to you as obviously valuable.
All right. I'm going to go back to stomping on his ashes.
I'm leaving with Elle.
Yeah, I've been heading down to the basement to find blueprints.
You guys are like going down the grav lifts. Oh, and you just hear like the faint like stomping up above you in this tower.
I was gonna say, guys, notice you're gone, and then run after you.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're having a good Wednesday. We have just released season 4, episode 33. And I wanted to say thank you for waiting so very patiently for this episode. And I wanted to come on here to say that we have officially wrapped season 4. Kind of crazy. And what that means is the very next episode is going to be the last episode of Guildfellows ever. Kind of crazy, insane. It'll be the last, like, regular, like, story episode. We're going to have a season 4 wrap episode, as we always do. And then we're going to have a podcast, postmortem, wrap up, whatever. So, as you're hearing this, if you're in our Discord channel, our question channel will be open for both season 4 questions and podcast overall questions. I think we're probably going to like go season by season and just kind of reflect and see how far we've come and all this stuff. But take this as the opportunity to kind of, you know, talk to all of us as a unit for the last time possibly. So yeah, that's what we're gonna do, which also means this is gonna be my last announcement, update, whatever thing ever probably. So yeah, I don't know, that's really all I kind of have to say. I'm a little behind on our social media pages, so I apologize for that, but we'll get there, we'll catch up. And, yeah, next week's gonna be the very last story episode, season 4 finale, and then, I'm not 100% sure when the wrap-up episodes are gonna happen. They may not happen for a while, simply because a lot of us are busy, and we're just kind of working around our schedule. So they might not happen for a few weeks. We're gonna try to squeeze them in eventually. We're going to try to squeeze them in quick, but if they don't happen for a minute, then they won't happen for a minute, but they'll definitely at least come out this summer. I will make sure that happens. They'll come out as soon as I can wrangle everyone together. So, yeah, that's it. I think that's all I really want to say. I don't really need to go into the regular spiel that I do because I don't know. It's almost over. Yeah, thank you to Arcane Anthems for the theme song, as always. And thank you to everyone who has listened thus far. And we'll get into it more once those wrap-ups come out. But yeah, that's what I've got. Thank you for listening. That's all I've got for you guys today. We love you all so much. Keep your heads up. Stay safe. We love you. I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Great. So then you just rush down the two grav lifts. You guys walk through the ruined house. As you guys come down the big central staircase, you do see like an old human butler with like salt and pepper hair just kind of like sweeping one of the broken droids into a dust pile. And is like, oh, good day to you. Just kind of sweeping, like pretending like nothing's wrong.
Yeah, just keep walking.
Back of my mind, I wanted to make a joke about like there's somebody spilled something in the room, and I was like, I probably don't want to give away our cover. Let's just keep moving.
Yeah, just keep walking.
As you guys are all walking, you all three get a comm signal through your communicators from Digo, and he says,
"Hey guys, I don't mean to be rude, but could we get going relatively soon here, or should I just stay by the van?"
We're about heading out. We just got a few things to pick up on our way.
Okay, good.
Just like stay by the van, you're fine.
Could one of those things that you pick up along the way be one of those shady stem packs that you have?
Wait, what the hell happened
to you? Oh, yeah. Oh, well, are they giving you trouble down there?
No, I've just been bleeding for about an hour since you guys have been in there. Shortly after the alarms went off, I had to fight the loading dock attendants. They were not much trouble, but they got a few lucky hits in, so.
How many of them did you take on?
You hear him count in an alien language.
Five.
Holy shit. I mean, I could have done that too.
All right. Do y'all want me to go and run down a stim pack, or... Yeah, I'll just go run down a stim pack. I'll meet you. I know where the fucking blueprints are.
Great. Okay. I'm just, I'm just posted up by the Wee Hall, so. over and out.
Yeah, got you.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to head his way with one of my janky stim packs.
Cool. Yeah, as you, like, so you go through the living room, through the little reading room where you guys initially fought the two IG-100s, down the stairs, hear the faint callings from the freezer room where you left those two cybernetic people hanging, and you just hear them saying, "Hey, if anyone's out there, we're still hanging up on the hook. Very sleepy.
Just sleep on the hook. Keep walking."
Okay. You walk back down the hallway through the doors leading to the big subterranean garage, and there you see Digo Nevada. What is his rate, like his species name again? I'm forgetting it.
Nautilin,
thank you. Yes. Our Nautilin friend with his like kind of like blue gray kind of fishy skin and his head tails, big black eyes. You can see several bullet holes like on the arms and shoulders of his like jackets where he was hit by like blaster fire. And around him, you see that there is a half cybernetic, half human corpse with a trident stuck in it, like sticking up out of the person's body. You see crossbow bolts and four other bodies that are posted up around the garage, and you see some laser bullet holes into the side of the Wee Hall van as well. But clearly, he took care of it in here.
Hello, my friend. Good to see you all in one piece. Or relatively
yeah,
so.
Yeah, you too.
Ah, yeah, you know, we manage. Oh, are you sure you don't want to go to Glianselum? The beach would have been so much nicer than the South Pole.
Yeah, but, you know, work is work.
Yeah, and work is never done.
Yeah.
Anyway, that janky shot, could you just go ahead and...
Yeah, I'll just go ahead and shoot in the side of his arm.
Oh, no, I prefer the thigh.
Yeah, sure, I'll shoot in the side of his thigh.
Cool. And he definitely, like, gets, like, kind of close to you while you, like, put this, like, shot into him. Like, he, like, grips, like, your shoulder, like, a little bit hard.
Yeah, I'm going to do outer thigh.
Yeah. Yeah, like, in the quad, for sure, for sure.
Yeah, least sexy part of the thigh, please.
And he kind of, like, leans back against the wee hall for a second, and you see his, like, breathing get a little bit steadier. His HP kind of, like, stabilizes. Okay, I'll be ready to drive in a few minutes. Are you guys ready to go, or where are you at?
Well, we killed Vent, so we just need to pick up some things, and then we can get out of here.
Oh, great, great. So he's completely dead and gone? You got the information that you wanted?
Yeah, we got there's still a few more things. We got the information we need from him. There's some stuff we need in there. But yeah, he like turned into a bunch of ash or something. So
he's
like gone.
Yeah, kick ass. Yeah. It sounds like you guys really fucked shit up in there. That was great.
Yeah, no, it was wild.
Yeah.
I'm going to... You good here?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll start the wee hall and get the heater going. And I'll reconnect our comms. With the main channel of the planet, so we can get in touch with Rosie.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm gonna go back and find those blueprints we're looking for.
Great. And he like claps you on your shoulder. And like turns around and starts getting inside the van, fucking around with it.
Yep.
Back to you.
So just to recalibrate. We're leaving the we're using the vaults here to store the things? Is that...
We are getting the blueprints of the vault here so Rosie can remake them so we can store them not here.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Unless you want to, like, post up South Pole forever. Yeah. Watch.
I mean, this house is empty now. I mean, like...
Yeah.
I'd have
finders keepers. That's how.
Decades.
What is it? Possession is 9/10 of the law, here, something me, like that. Me, is that correct, Rob?
Let me do this in character. So he mentioned that the artifacts naturally want to move towards each other. Do we want to bring the ring back to Rosie, who is one of these artifacts?
I was thinking about that myself. There's a way to keep them separate, store them right. You mentioned something like you mentioned a vault.
Yeah, he has the vaults here. Though they have been broken into before.
Where do you think he'd store the plans for it? Whatever he made them out of would probably be obtainable for our friend Rosie and replicable.
Right, but that's my issue, is do we want to trust her with it? With the ring and with the artifacts?
Well, here's my problem, wouldn't Monkey be conveying all this directly to her? She probably already knows Monkey has it inside him.
Well, we don't necessarily know that's true. We've been at the South Pole with our communications off.
Well, right, but, I just don't want to run into a thing if she already did know, because she's got eyes everywhere. I don't want her to not trust us, because we lied to her. But I guess you're right. We could take that gamble and think Monkey hasn't told Rosie yet. But you're probably right, though. I mean, it's just to be fully honest, I always kind of saw Monkey as Rosie's personal spy. But...
Yeah, he might as well be.
I mean, so...
I don't know. Let's find the blueprints and figure it out from there.
Sounds good to me. I'm going to pull up the blueprints on my like little wrist holographic thing and say, all right, what are you thinking?
Probably in the basement, right? It's where everything else is.
Great. Just one thing I love. It's a basement in a giant evil fucking... We can't get out of here fast enough. Let's move.
To remind you, the vault door is in the hallway by where you fought the Nexu. So it's like on your
way
out.
Yeah, with the movie theater. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to hightail it over there. Would Monkey like already be there since he would know he has to use the ring to get in? Or where is he?
Yeah, I'm going to say that Monkey was definitely ahead of you guys. Probably, like, left with L and then, like, yeah, like, went to the vault door when L, like, got the transmission. So he's just been, like, chilling, like, in front of the vault door. He has, like, the ring box, like, out with him. And you can see, like, it's swirling with, like, red smoke energy. Yeah, Akala, I'm going to say that it's, like, it's evidently obvious to you as you, like, see Monkey holding this ring box. Like, you're not feeling a force presence from it in this box. Like, whatever the construction of those containment units are that he was talking about, that, like, Rosie has approximated, like, and given to Monkey, it, like, walls off, like, the force energy of it. But they're not, like, indestructible. It's not like you're using, like, Beskar steel to protect something. You're, like, protecting the outside world from this thing. But he, yeah, he does have the ring box out, and looks like he is, like, kind of, like, waiting for you guys to give him some sort of signal to, like, open this thing and, like, interact with it. Monkey doesn't have blood, so, like, this thing is kind of innate against him. I was going to make you roll for that, but I figured, like, it's pretty logical. Like, this is a robot, so.
Can we say we all group up at or meet up at the door?
Sure.
How's our friend doing, Al?
Yeah, he's just getting the car ready. Had some trouble with the guards when the alarms went off, but he's fine now.
Not that I care about him. I'm just asking for a friend. Not that I have friends.
Is the friend Akala? Because, like, that's... Who else would you be asking
I
for?
I didn't ask.
Yeah, Akala was... Damn. You know what? Never mind. We got more important things to do, all right? Let's go.
I don't know why that's so funny to me. It's just like... Bravo, we're your only friends, right?
We're like, there's like three people. We're literally at the South Pole, is the thing. Like, I know you're not calling anyone else. We've established that the comms are down. Oh, yeah, he's also getting the comms ready to go back up so he can, you know, mess with Rosie or whatever. Yeah, Monkey, let's do this.
He opens the container. You hear a hiss. And the smoke comes out and, like, dissipates. Okay, everybody go ahead and roll me a constitution saving throw. Not the same one as last time. DC of 15.
19,
very good.
14.
And Rami, you got 11.
Yeah, it's I guess that my dice were doing too well for too long. That was a 6.
Okay. So as this red smoke dissipates and hits your guys' nostrils, you both in your mind start fixating on your greatest desires and source of greed in your life. So I think for Rama, like, you see, like, yourself in, like, very nice Beskar steel armor, like, even nicer than ones you have now, that's, like, gilded with more insignias, with, like, a fur, like, cover on one of your shoulders, and you see around you a bunch of Mandalorian foundlings in your own Mandalorian clan, and with a banner of a rose, and there is a forge master who you can't tell because they're wearing a helmet, but has the same figure and body type as a long-lost friend of yours who is hammering away at new Beskar steel armor, and it flashes to you again in your mind to a field in Alderaan, happily retired as an old man with credits upon credits upon credits to bankroll your existence. And all of this kind of infects your mind, and you feel yourself take a step towards Monkey.
I only question is, I'm trying to figure out in character if I would yell out to my long lost friend.
I mean, like, you're not, like, hallucinating this, but, like, you're, like, mulling over these, like, thoughts in your head. So, like, you can shout out if you want, but, like, this is all happening in your head.
I think I'm just mutter under my breath, like,
Zezza.
Hmm?
Never mind. I wasn't talking to you.
You take another step forward into the mist.
I'm gonna just...
Who the fuck is Rama talking to? Who the fuck is Rama talking about?
I honestly, IRL was like get misty-eyed. I'm gonna say like a tear like rolls beneath the Mandalorian helmet.
Akala, as this red mist hits your nostrils, a vision starts swirling in your mind that you start fixating on. The first thing that kind of pops into your head is you just start thinking about some like favorite spots of yours that you like around the Jedi Temple, around Coruscant, just like paths that you used to walk and like restaurants you really like going to. And then like your fixation like develops. You're like, oh yeah, this would be a really nice place to go on a date. This would be a really nice place to take my friend Elle. This would be, and you start thinking about holding hands in springtime and walking around gardens and going to space sushi spots and being openly in love with somebody that you've loved for a long time and not having to be accountable to anyone else about it. And you see visions of yourself leaving the Jedi Order. And you see visions of yourself going back home, powerful and independent to your family and doing what you want to do and taking Elle with you. And you see other visions of yourself thinking, well, what if I didn't do that? What if I ran the Jedi Order? What if I killed Master Grimwald and took over? And then nobody could tell me what the rules are. Nobody could tell me who I can and can't love or what I can and can't do. And you take steps into the mist. Hi, Elle. What you doing?
Okay, so from my perspective, this door opened and a bunch of mist poured out.
So Monkey took the ring out of the box and a bunch of like red mist that was like building up in the box is like, it's not like thick. It's like, it's a thin layer that has like hit your nostrils. You like felt like some of the influence of it, but you rocked it back. Your other two friends went glassy eyed and started taking steps toward the ring.
Yeah, I'm just gonna, you know, put a hand out on both of them.
Cool. Go ahead and just make me an athletics check with advantage because they're, like, very distracted.
16.
Yeah, I'll say that you're able to, like, grip them and control them. I'll let you narrate, like, what you do to, like, snap them out of it.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to hold both of them back because they're just, like, I'm literally putting, I'm just going to walk up, put both my arms between them and, like, just stop it as long as it takes for Monkey to open the vault and put the thing back in.
Cool. Yeah, like Monkey like looks up at you, like sees that you're like holding them back and go and like gives you like a nod and then puts the ring in the door very quickly, like messes around with it until he feels the mechanism activate, and then he puts it back in the box and seals it. And as like the smoke dissipates and the ring is like taken away from like the area that you can sense it and that can affect you, you both like snap out of your visions that you were in.
Yeah, I'm going to take, like, a step forward and kind of turn around to face both of them. Y'all good?
No.
You guys want to take a breather for a sec?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Let's just go. I'm going.
You sure?
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna look inside the vault.
Great.
Best not to dwell on things.
Right. So this black obsidian door, as the ring's activated in it, you see where it was formerly flat, you see a complex array of geometric straight lines burst like and like radiate like through the door from the spot of the like ring keyhole, glows dark crimson red. The door shifts and sinks slowly into the floor. And with like rumbling, it's like Masonic sounds of like stone hitting stone. In this room, you see just a set of tables in a black obsidian colored, like lined room. And you see a number of objects and blueprints on these tables. First two things that you guys see, you see empty cases where the Crown of Erebus and the Orb of the One Mind were kept. One of the containers is short and squat, and looks like it is shaped well enough to hold like a crown. It's not nearly as tall, and it has a pillow inside of it that has a clear indentation of where the crown must have been resting for many years before it was stolen by Sue. The other containment unit looks big enough to hold a circular object about the size of a softball. Clearly meant for the Orb of the One Mind, you see a half circular indentation into a foam block sort of deal at the bottom of it where the orb would rest. So you see those. You also see next to them the blueprints for the material composition and the electronic devices that are being used to suppress force energy with inside the cage. Rama, you go in. One of the first things that catches your eye, two. Count them, two. Ingots of Beskar steel.
Oh, score! I'm just going to run toward them and hope they're not trapped.
No, they're not trapped. They are just like printed with the Jedi seal, and the date on them says like day condensed, and it is like a day. Well, go ahead and roll me a lore check.
Jesus. That's a 9, as per expected.
The date on it doesn't have any significance to you, but you know that the Jedi symbol on the Beskar steel ingots indicates that it was steel that was taken and melted down during a repossession of Beskar steel from the planet Mandalore, presumably in one of the Mandalore Jedi wars. So this is technically like stolen. Yeah.
Because that'd be a pretty wide range of eras, so it would make sense I wouldn't know the year, but I could know where that's from.
Yeah, and like it could have been taken from any battle, any time. If you had known the date, like you may have known the specifics about it, which would have just been some more background information. But anyway, you know that it's been repossessed. This is technically like your birthright, if you believe like your clan's teachings, as a child of Mandalore.
I'm going to walk up to it and just be thinking like, well, just, I think I would say out loud, like, if I still had a clan, maybe they'd be proud. Getting back what bastards stole from us. Bunch of sorcerer ass punk whatever.
I just look at you.
What?
What do we got in here?
Just some metal. I'm gonna grab them and store them in something. I guess I don't have a bag. Most of what I have is attached to me.
I think that you probably. I mean, like you definitely like had to expend some ammo on this trip, so I think like you can safely store those ingots in like one of your empty ammo belt pouches or something like nice. That.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I'll throw it in an ammo pouch on my belt.
Yeah, Rama, you also are kind of like looking around, and you see like framed on the wall, like on a gun rack, is a large two-handed pistol that has like blue and red like accented like gun parts. So like the slide for it is like this dark crimson red, and the like inside the chamber has been like fitted with a cobalt blue, and on the outsides you see like streaks and the Arrakeed logo on the outside of the gun, but it is like this massive like hand cannon laser pistol that is on the wall.
Can I grab it?
Grab it. I mean, if it's
there, you're gonna grab it, right? I'm gonna pick it up and like,
you know, weapons are part of my religion. This is basically finding the Holy Grail. Holy shit.
This gun does 1d10 kinetic.
Ooh.
It is it's kinetic because it's a slug cartridge, so it's an actual like
cool.
Yeah, fires like 50 cal rounds.
blow my arm off.
The range is Yeah, so it takes 11 strength to wield. You get 8 shots before you reload, and it has the brutal quality. So you two stumble upon some items that are could be attractive for either of you. There is, first of all, there is a small tool that stands out because in the center of it, so it's a steel tool that has a clear glass casing in the center, and in the center of that glass casing is a orange kyber crystal. And you see that the tool is shaped like a wrench, but there are two little metal probes at the end of the wrench points and a button on the base of the tool that looks like a lightsaber activator button. So that's the first thing that you guys see just on a desk. And you don't see any other like identifying things about it.
I'm going to press the button.
Okay. You press the button, and in between the two spokes of the wrench, a lightsaber thin blade juts out in between them. And I'll have you roll technically a technology check. Mm-hmm. Well, no, yeah, just go ahead and roll me a technology check. Let's just see what this does. But do it with advantage because you've made a lightsaber before.
15.
You think this thing could cut kyber crystals without breaking them.
Interesting.
I was going to say it's like a little floss toothpick sort of deal.
It's exactly like that. It's like that exactly. It's a great comparison. Okay. So the two things that I think could go to really anyone. So the first thing is a set of blueprints for experimental hover boots that appear, if they were to be constructed properly, would allow you to activate them and travel 60 feet in a direction of your choosing. And it would not give you a fly speed, but it would allow you to hover on a plane that you are currently on. You just cannot ascend like rocket boots. But like, say you were on a cliff for a time, you could like Looney Tunes hover at the height of the cliff and not drop, if that makes sense, if you're going fast enough. You couldn't like travel like indefinitely like that, but you could cross large spaces at 60 feet of movement per turn if you were able to make these boots and put them on. The other thing that's in this room is a really swank looking scaly leather jacket that appears to be made out of the exotic scales and skin of a creature that is unknown to you, but these scales shine with like a like swirling like rainbow gleam, like they change colors kind of chromatically as it like shifts, like certain like Lamborghinis, you know what I mean? Like when they're like have that specific finish where they kind of like change and like swell a little bit, like as the light hits different angles on the car. It's like that, but in a color. Jacket.
Yeah.
And you can tell that like the skin and the scales are very tough. And mechanically, it would give you a +1 to your AC to wear this jacket, and it wouldn't replace any other armor you have on. It would just give you a +1 to AC. And you don't know, it might have other effects, but you don't know yet. So those are the two other options for loot. I'll let you guys work out who wants what, or if you guys want to, like, if neither of those options sound good, then I'll fucking roll some tables.
I'm looking at that leather jacket is the thing.
See, I got phase walk, so I don't really need the boots. I can teleport 30 feet. So.
Okay.
I got
but that takes force points, yeah?
Yeah, it is a second level spell. But
these boots would allow you to move 60 feet on your turn.
True. But do they look stylish is the thing.
Well, you just have the blueprint, so you can have them made to specifications. So you could make these into heels if you wanted. Fuck, I don't care.
Okay, so I'm gonna pocket the blueprints because any one of us can be holding on to those.
Sure.
Because we just need to make it later. I like this leather jacket. What are your vibes on the leather jacket, other party members?
I mean, it's a little flashy for Akala's taste, but I think she probably also has the lowest AC.
Unbeknownst to you guys, I just got Beskar Steel, which is basically crack, so I'm just going to be nonchalantly like, you know, honestly, you guys pulled my ass through a lot of this. If you guys want that, I can pass on this. There's a big hand cannon on the wall. I mean, it's fine. I'll let you guys have it.
All right. consider that I am a melee tank.
Yes, fine. Go for it.
Yay! Okay, I will remember this. The next time we get some cool shit, you can have the cool shit.
I mean, we can all get rocket boots.
We all get rocket boots.
Okay, so Elle, as you slip this jacket on, the first thing is you can tell that this is actually a like force magical object. And it attunes to you right away, and you like see the visions of a two-headed monstrosity of a dragon that is known as a battle hydra. And you like intuit the history of these like dark side force created colossal monstrosities that used to be terrific weapons of force destruction in the universe that were held by the earlier forms of the Jedi Order. And you are wearing one as a jacket. The jacket like completely reads your vibe, says, right, so sleeves are optional. So, like, the formerly, like, long sleeves, like, split and roll themselves up to, like, a quarter of your shoulder. So, like, there's, like, some coverage, but, like...
Like, just above the elbow?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah,
or, like,
yeah.
Up the...
Like, it's not, like, a tank, but it's, like, it comes up to, like, mid-level.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, hell yeah.
Also, go ahead and pick a color palette for me, or just like I'll let you know the jacket can change colors. So like, without trouble.
I'm gonna keep it as a black leather jacket. Ooh, okay. With like the little pearlescent kind of vibes. If it catches light, like a little more subtle than it is maybe now.
Yeah. But it settles on to like a nice like dark like charcoal black that then kind of like has some of that pearlescent like oil slick kind of sheen to it. It also the other effect of this jacket is that dark side aligned creatures have disadvantage on constitution saving throws when near you. The skin of the battle hydra terrifies many who are sensitive in the force, but none feared the dark side terror more than those that knew to fear it, which were the other dark side creatures that it preyed upon. So that's the effect of that. And for now, that's all the other stuff that's in the loot room.
I'm just going to ignore the fact that this is made of dark side monster stuff and just pretend that that's not relevant and not share that information with anyone.
Cool.
It'll be all the same to me if it makes you feel better.
It wouldn't be to me.
Yeah, it's a good thing you didn't put on the jacket.
Yeah, good thing I did. I mean, it does stunt dark side creatures, so that's a...
Because it's worse.
Yeah, I guess, but still.
It's literally one of those things, yeah, where it's like, think about if you were wearing like a dragon skin cloak and you like walked up to like a goblin, the goblin would be like, fuck, that thing's wearing a dragon. I'm toast. Like, what is that? Yeah. So disadvantage on constitution saving throws. Yeah, so plus one to AC. Dark side aligned creatures have disadvantage on constitution saving throws when they're within a 30-foot radius of you.
Oh, that's better than my current aura.
Well, what is your current aura? Because I kind of high-key just threw that number out.
Oh, well, my paladin aura only goes for 5 feet because it increases as you level.
Right, okay. Yeah. I'm actually going to tone it down then and say 15
feet. My guardian aura, sorry.
So 15 feet. So half your movement distance away. It has.
Next time I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
Sorry, it's on the fly balancing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Great. So all that's left to do is skedaddle.
Did we find the... Did we just have the vaults? There weren't blueprints to the little, like, the magic item storing vault?
Yes. Yeah, so you are able to carry out the small crown-sized containing unit and the larger one that held the Orb of the One Mind. So in total, you've got three containers and you've got two of the objects, two of the five.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't have the orb in your possession. I guess Rosie technically has it, so.
Yeah. We'll grab the wrench cutter and head out.
Excellent. So you guys go into the garage. Digo welcomes you all. Hey, welcome back. Good job. Good mission. Good to see that you're not completely dead, Mandalorian. Monkey, low five. You guys boot up the van. Digo kind of fiddles with like some of the controls and stuff like that. And you guys get like a lot of radio static from the channel he's trying to reach. And he's like, this is so weird. For the past few minutes, I've been trying to reconnect to the comms network, and it's still not working. Maybe something in the van got shot in the engagement.
Do you think Monkey has mechanical capabilities?
Well, if it's it's not like he needs to hack it. It's more so like, well, actually, yeah, Monkey jack in. So once we start flying, I can better access the satellite connection networks, and we can try to get a better connection to Rosie as we fly. It's just so weird.
The Weehaw van starts on, lifts off the ground. He maneuvers it out and flies up into the upper atmosphere of Coruscant. You guys fly for a couple hours, getting out of the south sector of the planet and fly up towards the capital city sector of Coruscant. And as you do, the comms start coming on. There's a certain threshold where all three of you receive a message on various communicators from the Coruscant government. That is a warning. And it says, warning, unidentified satellite object around the Coruscanti moon airspace. Do not attempt to leave the planet. Airspace quarantine on outer system. Which just tells you that, like, the greater planetary zone of Coruscant is being quarantined off because of an unknown satellite object that has gotten itself near one of the moons of Coruscant. The other thing, Akla, you have a lot of missed calls from Oogley.
Fuck.
A lot of missed calls. Like, he's been trying to call you, like, every 10 minutes for the past, like, 4 or 5 hours. L, you do not have any messages from Cecil about her arriving safely at the Jedi Order or anything that happened or any progress on her. Rama, you also don't get any other messages. Save for one from Rosie, which just says ... Jackson's garage. It's done.
I am Jackson's garage. I'm gonna message back. it's a text message. My voice doesn't come out in this one. I'm just gonna text back, send a picture, ?
Normally you'd get a little notification of like sent and like delivered, and it stalls, like it's not delivering. And your connection is kind of going in and out. Like you can see like the like connection rating on your communicator like waxing.
Can I just send a non-fixed message saying like it's done?
Just like trying to send like the normal, yeah, same thing happens, it doesn't deliver.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
All right.
Since I don't know that's happening, I'm just going to text you okay ? To Cecil.
Okay, so you send that message. You guys are flying through the Coruscanti airspace. You notice that, like, so we're flying kind of close to the surface. Like, we're not in the upper atmosphere where most of the customs is. Like, you guys are allowed to fly around the planet. But you see that there's been, like, a big disturbance. Like, there's a, like, full, like, fleet blockade near the moon. And you guys are able to, like, look up on your sensors and you see like a honeycombed, massive shaped ship orbiting one of the moons, like on the far side of the moons of Coruscant. And there's a lot of like social media posts about like, weird honeycomb appears in the Coruscant-y sky. Some say they saw probes coming out of it, but we don't know what it is. Is this an incursion, a Sith force, or just a funky spaceship? More at 11, like that sort of thing. It doesn't seem like it's like a like militaristic threat, but it's like somebody parked their big satellite like right outside Coruscant. It's like,
hey, Akala, I think there's a new moon.
That's no moon.
Okay, so you guys are flying, and as you get closer to the capital sector of Coruscant, you like notice that like as you fly over the power and lights district, there's like a lot of fires and like people in the streets and like a lot of civil unrest. It looks like the power and lights district got like real bad again.
How long were we gone for?
Like total time, like it's been like
6 hours, right?
Yeah, like it's been like a busy like 7 to 8 hours.
Some poor fuck took a 6 hour nap and woke up to that in the Fountain Lights district.
It was us. We took the 7 hour nap and we came back and here we are.
Yes. Things look bad. There's like smoke coming from the Power and Lights district. You guys see like a lot of police activity on the edges, and you see a lot of people like exiting the Power and Lights district. Like there's been an evacuation order. You guys get into Republica 500 or 500 Republica, and normally at this point you would be able to establish comms with Rosie, but the Weehawk communicator is still not able to get through to her network. And as you approach the building with her wooden cabin tea shop on this large overhang of this super tower, you see that like there, the garage like door on the side of the tower that is used to like covertly get in and out is like not opening for you. You guys like are hovering by that garage and there's like no communication and like no ability to interact with that door. And even Monkey tries to get through the network, and you see that he starts acting erratic. Like he starts like hooting and hollering and pounding his chest and starts
Monkey.
And he like starts looking out the windows towards the garage and like starts looking like really frantic.
All right, we'll go through the tea shop. Come on.
Okay. And Digo like pulls back hard, and you guys zoom up. You pull into like the more quaint parking lot surrounded by like grass and trees by this cabin that is evocative of like a Midwestern bookstore suspended in the middle of a huge industrial city. You guys walk in the front door and you see that the hidden entryway behind the bookcase is open and the elevator door is like there. Like it's already been called, and you see that the shop is even more disheveled than usual. Like people came through here quickly and were looking for things. Yeah, that's what you see.
We're going down, right? Going down to the garage if we can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm already, like, walking through.
Yeah, you guys hit the open, like, elevator button. It opens. Monkey gets in and starts, like, jumping up and down, like, still pounding, like.
Can I pick him up? Just calm him down.
You, like, try to, but he, like, wiggles out of your grasp and is just, like, pacing around, like, looking at the elevator closed doors, like, as it's moving down floors. Like, he's losing it. You guys get down to the bottom floor of the elevator. The elevator doors open. And you look over the workspace and the garage. And at the other end of the garage, like 300 feet all the way at the other end of the garage, where the outside garage door is, you see three figures. One of them is holding an orb about the size of a grapefruit and is holding a purple lightsaber in her other hand. There are dead bodies and destroyed droids all over Rosie's workshop. You hear Sue say from across the room, "We got what we came for." And you see a rose gold mechanical head fly off of a body that was sitting on the floor. And Rosie the droid's head clatters between you.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.